Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
To talk all things Gardos, the Locked On Guardians host Justin Latta joins us now on the Fan Hotline. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Just busy around here doing a little bit of housework, you know, getting some sweeping done.
I like that. I like that very much because the Guardians swept the Tigers. I understand the joke.
So how we feel laughing. About that? Appreciate it.
Yeah, Justin, I was like, maybe you need to get a Roomba, but that's neither here nor there.
So I guess we'll get to the sweep. I don't know. I mean, let's see. FanGraphs has updated their playoff percentage for the Guardians to 26%. Where does the Locked On Guardians percentage stand?
I'm going to say 50%. I'm going to put it all up to 50%. Not the division, but just making the playoffs. I'm going to give them a 50% chance. I think they got to stay hot over the next week, which is a lot harder to do considering they've been hot. But I think it's 50-50. I think it's a coin flip for them to get in the playoffs at this point.
What would your response be to every national pundit that's just going to bring up the run differential being bad?
I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean run differential? I don't know how they get this done. No. Sometimes it just matters when you get hot. That's what we were saying the other day. It's like, I don't know how good this team is. Like, you look at the lineup every day and you're like, how do they keep winning games? Because the lineup doesn't really inspire a confidence in a team that's going to score enough runs to win. But the pitching has been unbelievable, and they're just hot at the right time. The only question is going to be if they can stay hot long enough to get in. It just matters when you're good.
How big was it for Tanner Bibee, who's been so up and down this year, to go out there and hold his own with Tarek Skubal?
That's really big. I mean, it obviously started last week, right, with the complete game shutout. I think that gave him a ton of confidence. I think he's been gaining confidence the last couple of starts. That start in Tampa Bay was all right. I think he's been moving in the right direction for a while now and just getting things settled. But, yeah, I think the complete game last weekend, I think, was a big deal. And then, obviously, today you go out there and I don't think anyone's going to sit here and say that he's better than Tarek Skubal, but I think the only guy that's better than Tarek Skubal is Paul Skenes. But he went out there and matched him pitch for pitch, out for out. And if you can do that against Tarek Skubal and the Tigers, I think you can do it against anybody.
Yeah, the starters and the bullpen have really just kind of shined through this little stretch here. And I almost wonder if this has now become what the Guardians' identity has to be, because the offense just isn't there, but it doesn't really seem like it matters.
No, I had said a couple weeks ago, I forgot. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people wrote them off after the 10-game losing streak and then the 1-9 stretch and then the non-disciplinary discipline of the two pitchers that will not be named. But, yeah, if they had any chance to get back into this race to make things serious for this season, I think that was heading into the trade deadline. And I said the only way they're going to do it is if the pitching steps up, they're going to have to win a lot of 3-2 and 2-1 games. And that's who they've become. They've become a team where they can score two or three or four runs. Four has always been their magic number, I think, probably for 10 years now, and that's the magic number for both teams. But, yeah, if they can score two or three runs, this pitching staff unbelievably has been good enough to make it hold up, and that's what they're going to have to do over the next, 10 games left.
Justin, you mentioned 10 games left. We had this conversation earlier. How many do you have to win? Like, conservatively, what's the win-to-loss ratio that you have to achieve in the next 10 games to safely secure a wild card spot of the division?
When they got to 12 this week, I think we said 9-3 was probably the spot they had to get to. And that included probably losing to Tarek Skubal. And that included maybe a loss next week to Detroit. And that included maybe a loss between the Minnesota series and the Texas series, depending on when that falls. Now that there's 10 games left, I don't know if 7-3 gets it done, because other teams have just not. I mean, Boston lost today, right? And, you know, Houston and Seattle are going back and forth. Maybe 7-3 works because you're playing the Tigers, so you control your own destiny there, kind of. And the Mariners and Astros could beat each other up, and that could help you out a lot. So I would say 7-3, but probably 8-2.
So obviously, if they end up winning the division, A.J. Hinch would be taken out of the equation then for manager of the year, because that's just a disastrous free fall, even though he's at the top of the leaderboard for a lot of people right now. John Schneider's still there for the Blue Jays. Dan Wilson's still there for the Mariners. It's not crazy to think Vogt could win back-to-back. Do you feel like it's on the board if the Guardians erase this deficit?
Right. I mean, if you're asking logically, sure. But the whole thing about the manager of the year is just so goofy, because I don't think anybody really ever thinks about this award logically, because it's always the manager who comes in with the least amount of expectations, right? Like 2013, it was Tito, because the Guardians, or the Indians at the time, had just come off one of the worst seasons they've had since the early 90s. And last year, nobody knew what Steven Vogt could do, and nobody thought they'd win the division. So it's always going to a team, a manager that comes into the year and everybody doesn't expect to be good. The Tigers and the Guardians both should have been expected to be good this year. I mean, they both made the playoffs. They played a great ALDS last year. So logically, neither of those guys, I think you're right. I think it's John Schneider, even though the Blue Jays were expected to be good, but I don't know who it's going to be. I really don't know. Maybe it'll be on a Bing. Who is it in Seattle? Dan Wilson, the catcher. It might be him. I don't know. Steven Vogt deserves it though. Let me tell you that. Just the way this season has gone, all the ups and downs, I think there's a very good case to be made.
Justin, I don't want to look too far ahead, because you still got some road to hoe here to actually clinch a playoff spot. But given how dominant this rotation's been, who starts game one of a 3-game series?
Well, I guess that depends how things line up. I'm trying to think here. Tanner Bivey and Gavin Williams, because they got moved up to Wednesday and Thursday this week, instead of waiting till an extra day on that 6-man rotation like they have been doing, they'll both get to start, I think, two more times down the stretch. They'll face Detroit next week, and then one of them might pitch in the Rangers series. So it's really going to depend on who's available, but I don't think you can go wrong with Gavin or Tanner in game one. I think it has to be one of them. I think you have to have one of them. I mean, I don't think you want to be throwing Slade Ciccone or Parker Messick game one of a playoff series, but if you have one of those two guys going game one, if things line up that way, I think you'll be in good shape.
I think for the casual Guardians fan, they tune in and then they see a Cade Smith blown save, or they see a Hunter Gaddis implosion or something along those lines. And I think it's really hard to explain how they've been, from a statistical standpoint, not only one of the best bullpens in baseball, but legitimately best FIP in the whole stretch of September into August. Like, how do you explain how this bullpen, even though they've had some highlighted moments that stink, really have come together?
I don't know, because they're incredibly thin. If you go back to April, I think we all knew that this bullpen wasn't going to be as good as it was a year ago, because it was historically good, and it's very hard to repeat that, especially when you go into the postseason and pitch deep the way they did and relied on their bullpen. And they tried to add, they added Paul Sewald, didn't work out. Junis has been pretty good outside of 1 month. It's just been a lot of guys stepping up. I mean, they lost, their closer, their Hall of Fame track closer, and Cade Smith has to go into the closer's role. Hunter Gaddis, hadn't been as good as he was a year ago. Colby Allard, I mean, he pitched an incredible inning today. Tim Herron was out of the equation halfway through the year because he couldn't throw strikes, and he probably threw three of the biggest innings this week in Detroit. It's, Eric Sobrowski missed most of the year. He came back late. They don't have Andrew Walters. Nick Enright, who looked like he was going to be a guy who was a key cog in that bullpen, he's now hurt, unfortunately. So I really don't know how to tell. I mean, it's Cade's Matt Festa. I mean, nobody knew who Matt Festa was in April when the Guardians traded cash for him. It's just been a lot of guys stepping up, and this has probably been a better bullpen this year than last year, not based on stats, but based on personnel that had to do the things they're doing.
Justin, obviously we're all excited. We all hope they make the playoffs from here. But if the Guardians, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, how do we define this season?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, they certainly went through a lot of learning lessons, right? I mean, you had your ace, the guy who signed the long-term contract, had to go through a bumpy season. Gavin Williams, I think he's blossomed into a top-of-the-rotation starter that we all hoped he would be. Offensively, unfortunately, they just didn't really do a whole lot. Like, you got Kyle Manzardo, who stepped up in a big way, I think, this year. And, you know, you got C.J. Kapus to the big leagues, even though had other people been healthy, he probably would have been left behind for other guys. That's the hard thing, is like, you really didn't develop anybody offensively because you didn't have the chance to, right? Because Brito was hurt, DeLauder's hurt, Bezzana got hurt. All three of those guys should have been contributing this year. Bo Naylor's had a good September, but offensively it's been a struggle for him. Like, your offensive wins are Kyle Manzardo and C.J. Kapus and Jose Ramirez is Jose Ramirez. I think it's the starting pitching. I think moving into next year, you feel confident about all your pitching options. You got Tanner and Gavin and Slade and Parker Messick and Logan Allen and Cal Steven. You know, you have Joey Cantillo, who we haven't even mentioned. I think you feel at least like you have a really strong pitching factory once again heading into 2026 if they don't make the playoffs this year.
Justin, great stuff, buddy. I'm sure it's a big day for you guys on the Locked On Guardians podcast. You guys do so darn good. We appreciate you.
Oh, we appreciate you guys, too. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much. Justin Latter there on the fan hotline. We'll react to what he had to say. And a discrepancy noted for NFL head coaches in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
So I think it's just simply Tyreek Hill could be the answer here. And I think so. If I'm going to caution Stefanski in any sort of way, it is the idea that Mike McDaniel was basically, I mean, he could do whatever he wanted for a couple year stretch, because not only was he attempting to win games, but they were competitive, they had a really fun offense, and they seemed like they were heading in the right direction, and then the bottom fell out. But we've made the connection before between McDaniel and Stefanski and how all these different national people view them. Thinks McDaniel's great, thinks McDaniel is some sort of, you know, great offensive mind. And I think Tyreek Hill alone has really neutered not only the perception of Mike McDaniel, but really what any confidence any Miami Dolphins fan would have in Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, I think the Tyreek stuff's big. I just think it's the quintessential stuff of Mike McDaniel doing things that are weird or silly or goofy or whatever, and trying to play with the media. It doesn't save you if you fall short of expectations.
Well, I mean,
and I think that's maybe where Kevin Stefanski is smart to not give the media anything, and why he doesn't.
I just feel like, if because I've been trying to figure out for years why, in fact, the media just still just fawns over Stefanski, and why they still just, they love him, and there's nothing that can take you off the idea that Stefanski is a great coach. They just all continue to tell us that. It, when us locally here just sing a little bit of a different tune. And I think it's got to be the idea, just how public you let everything get. I mean, the players-only meeting that the Dolphins held, the idea that, Tyreek not being named a captain while then letting all the other teammates vote on who would be the captain, all these things come into play. And ultimately, I think the public perception shifted on Mike solely because of these other scenarios, and they haven't bit Stefanski because of what you're talking about.
And it's weird. I know they haven't had a lot of playoff success, right? What, no playoff win since 2000?
2000, yeah.
But he's been to the playoffs two of the last 3 years. Last year, their low was 8-9.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast? You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show. Your way and on your time.
Browns are 3-14. They've had one playoff win in going on 6 years now, and the last time they're in the playoffs, they got smoked.
Right.
So
but
last 4 years, it's no playoff wins, and the fluky element of 2023 can't be ignored.
But the genius of Stefanski in all this is that the perception is the house is in order. Even through 3-14, we never felt like he lost everyone. And even though we had stories about the locker room, it never hit the front page of an ESPN show or a national publication. The idea was, Well, Stefanski's the adult. Stefanski still has everything in charge. Where McDaniel's losing everyone right now and has for basically about a month straight is that nobody thinks he knows what he's doing, and it feels like the people on the Dolphins are running the team more than McDaniel is, and Stefanski's never let that part go.
Yeah, and here's one other way. I think Mike McDaniel is good in front of the media, but I don't think that he has done the work, whereas Kevin is not good in front of the media. I think he's really good with the media, specific members of the media, calculated members of the media away from the microphone.
So, but I thought McDaniel was for a little bit. I really did, because he was getting the same type of hype and buy-in that Stefanski's getting. But you've noticed everyone's left. They've all left the idea that he's some sort of wunderkind and he's some sort of from the Shanahan tree. The way we look at like KOC, for instance, I'm still using KOC, as the McVay disciple. And we've done this with before. We've done this with Zach Taylor. They've all just kind of ran from that.
So, by the way, just as a quick aside, because we were talking about this with John Kuhn earlier, it's really a crime that we don't put Matt LaFleur into the Shanahan, the Sean McVay in that conversation, because I know he doesn't have the Super Bowl yet. I know he hasn't been to the Super Bowl like Shanahan, but and certainly McVay's won it. For my money, what LaFleur did reinventing Aaron Rodgers and getting him back to MVP level, reinventing the offense, and then the transition to Jordan Love, I don't know too many things are that impressive in the NFL.
I think the past couple of weeks you've started to see him get way more respect, but you're right. He does not get put up in that big-time coaching, I don't know, top five, top 10 range, where he definitely should be.
And so it's interesting because we're talking about two guys who, I mean, I think Kevin Stefanski's gotten a lot more credit than LaFleur. I think Mike McDaniel has early in his career more than LaFleur, and I just think that's really, really interesting because Matt's also coaching for one of the five best organizations in the history of football.
Yeah, I think he's starting to get the credit, though.
But it's interesting, it's just coming now. I think that's where...
Well, I think the Jordan Love intro was very hard because Jordan Love really did stink for 2 months straight. Like, he sat for 3 years, and then he got an opportunity in the first 8 games of his career. Couldn't have gone any worse. And then the next 9 were awesome. And so, like, I think there was a lot of catch-up that a lot of people had to do there. And then Jordan Love last year, he played through some injuries. He looked fine. He didn't look great. Like, there's still some up and down attached to it, but now it looks like things are heading in a better direction. But the McDaniel stuff is just, it's very fascinating to me. It's just a lesson of how certain people get treated and how when you have the disgruntled wide receiver, you have the players-only meeting, you have the loss the way that they did last week to a division rival. Like, you see how it all just collapses really quickly.
So we do have the Kevin Stefanski show coming up in about 30 minutes' time. Don't forget, though, Dolphins-Bills tonight on 92 The Fan. And I have heard more than a few people nationally speculate if this is a blowout and the Dolphins are 11.5-point dogs, even though it's on the road, that should also be noted, that this could be curtains for Mike McDaniel as soon as tomorrow morning or tonight. So I don't know that that's definitive, but there's a lot of speculation this could be a sticky wicket with Mike McDaniel. How did Mike McDaniel lose the media when Kevin Stefanski hasn't as of yet? And we're talking national media. Let's go ahead and get to our buddy.
It's time to put it on the line with Cash Lovett, sponsored by BetMGM and MGM Northfield Park.
So on the Fan Hotline, it is Cash Lovett. Cash, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good. We appreciate you joining us as always. Cash, of course, joins us every single Thursday at 6:30 to share his picks. I do want to point out, I'm looking at the games you're interested in right now. I got to jam you up, buddy. This is only our third week together. We're building the bridge to Trust Town. No Browns and Packers. I am incensed, but not really.
No, I wanted to attack it in multiple different ways, and then I was like, I can't go against the Browns 2 weeks in a row. Unless we can get Myles Garrett to rename the Defensive Player of the Year award, I just didn't see any real way that we're going to be able to bet it.
So is this a game that you just stay away from in general, or are you just being a loyal Browns fan?
For me, I would just stay away in general. I mean, like, I like the under, but you can just see some late garbage time. They let Dylan Gabriel or Shador go ahead, throw it around the yard, and then all of a sudden you're holding the under 41.5 ticket, and it's, what, like 35 to 14, and you're just kicking yourself?
Well, Cash, I'll tell you this. Miami-Buffalo is a stay-away game for me. That line is too rich for my blood. Way too many points for me to be trying to cough up there. How do you see it?
A little bit like you. I don't think we've ever seen week three have a double-digit point spread. This might be the first time. But I think we've all looked at the Dolphins and just, like y'all were doing, expertly saying, Mike McDaniel's not only lost the media, he's lost the team, players-only meetings. The two ways that I love this game is the Bills minus 11.5. But what I really love is James Cook over 68.5 rushing yards. Because believe it or not, the Bills have the number one rush attempts in the NFL.
Cash, looking to the college game, it's a great slate here. We got a couple big Big Ten games, but looking over in the SEC, Auburn at Oklahoma. Where are you at here?
It once again pains me to hitch my wagon to that Boomer Sooner, but I really don't see any way that Auburn's going to be able to hang with them in Norman, Oklahoma. I'm sure everyone's seen the news. Jackson Arnold was at Oklahoma. Brent Venables is one of the best defensive coaches, I think, over in the past 10 to 15 years in college football, with what everyone wants to say over at Clemson, everything he's done at Oklahoma. John Crazy Leg Matiers is out there doing some wonderful things with that offense. It looks revitalized. I like him even right now at minus 7, but that's probably the highest that I would take it.
I got to say, it pains me to do. You keep doing it with the Sooners, friend. At some point, I feel like you're breaking our ankles here.
No, I enjoy making money. And so if I have to root on my rival, I get to see them be undefeated as we head into Dallas, Texas. You got the Texas State Fair, all of your delicious food, and then we get to break them and their spirits, all the better. You know, just like you want Michigan. You want them to be undefeated. You want them to be like, hey, let me get those tears. 5 years in a row, we're going to take it.
I'd actually like him to lose every game.
Let's go into that game because Nick's got a lot of confidence in Matt Rhule. My only rule with Matt Rhule,
the golden rule
is that when he's playing AP top 25 teams, you don't do it with Matt Rhule. He's 2-22 versus AP top 25 teams. Michigan in the top 25. I got another feeling he's just going to vomit all over his shoes again.
I think it's a fantastic rule. I mean, I know it's year three. They say it's the turnaround. Nebraska's got all of this. You think that they're meat and potatoes, run the ball, play defense. Well, guess what? They can't play defense. They stink running the ball. Michigan is going to sit here, lock them up. I think we saw Bryce Underwood start getting a little bit more comfortable in the second half against Oklahoma. I think they're going to rush for over 150, 200 yards, somewhere in that range, and just kind of eat away the clock. We're looking at a nice low scoring, like 24-7. Matt Rhule has vomited all over himself, as you like to say.
I've got to be honest with you. I'm going to be really happy to be right and righter than both of you. All right, getting back to the NFL game, Dallas at Chicago. Please tell me you weren't putting any stock into Ben Johnson impact in Chicago, because me likey Dallas.
Look, I know we're in Cleveland, but sometimes you just got to go with America's team, right? They had the fantastic documentary. The way I would look at this, though, it's minus one at minus 110, or you can just take them on the money line at minus 115. Go ahead, take Dallas on the money line, pay the extra 5 cents. That way you don't have to worry about a pusher or anything. Watch that offense storm up and down the field as Ben Johnson is wondering why he left the safety of being an amazing offensive coordinator with that talented offense.
How do you see Rams-Eagles this weekend?
This was the scariest one that I did because it goes against one of my cardinal rules of when you see West Coast traveling East Coast in an early game, those body clocks just have not adjusted. But I really like the Rams. We're getting the hook at plus 3.5. I think Matt Stafford and that offense is humming on absolute cylinders. The Eagles offense is looking just kind of tush push or nothing. Hey, let's get it to 3rd-and-3 or something. We'll do it twice in a row, get our first down and keep going. Well, Jalen Carter on defense also got kicked out of the first game. Didn't look very good in the second game. And those young cornerbacks are looking a little bit like they can be taken advantage of. So Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams, Matt Stafford just running away with this game with a little bit of revenge from the playoffs.
All right. You are a former offensive lineman. I know because I've Googled you. So I will ask this. I am also a former Hog Molly, and I am enraged at the anti-tush-push-push that has been from the media at large this week. I think the tush-push is a beautiful play. I think it's an American play. Again, you are a former offensive lineman. Cash, what do you think about the tush push?
Look, I've never seen a holding call in my life. I've never seen a false start by an offensive lineman. But I will say we have to line up behind the ball. Outside of that, absolutely. Let's start bear crawling, move them 5 or 6 yards down the field, let the quarterback dive over and keep going. Just line up behind the ball is the only thing that I'm asking for. So that you're right, we can watch beauty in motion. There's nothing better than seeing a 330-pounder work his way down the field with two people on his back.
And I'll tell you this, you also want to make sure to wait for the snap. I would say that would be another thing they keep doing. Cash, good stuff this week, buddy. Appreciate you.
No, I appreciate y'all. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Put it on the line with Cash Lovett, sponsored by BetMGM and MGM Northfield Park.
One segment to go, in case you missed it in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.